Thank you, Dan.
He has a circular letter that's distributed about twice a year. The latest copy has been enlarged. It's on the board outside. You can read a lot about the work in Eastern Europe during the lunch period while you're waiting to come back. First, Bill, give us a little brief introduction to yourself, your wife, your family, whatever, and what assembly you commanded from, and how long you've been in so-called full-time service.
As soon as I open my mouth, you'll recognize my speech betrays me. I'm very much from the other side of the pond, in the sense that I'm English-born, London-born, but my heritage is very Central European. My grandfather left the central parts of Europe. In his day, it was part of the old Austrian Empire, and today it's a part of Czechoslovakia, his hometown. He settled in London over 130 years ago, and my father and I were born there. Today, I have a wife and two daughters. One of them is married with four sons, and they are in law, but just breaking away from that to go happily under grace. But what I mean by that, they are both my daughter and her husband were attorneys, and they have given it up recently and are now studying to enter the Christian ministry. My older daughter is the principal of a school, and she is very active in Christian work, having a very good Christian staff and so on. We are based, our home is about 35 miles southeast of London, and from there we carried on our operations over into Eastern Europe, where we entered in 1950.
What about this work in Eastern Europe? Some people have the idea that it's just since the walls of communism began crumbling down and it's all new, but tell us something about the background of the assembly activity.
Well, the walls have come tumbling down, because in case you haven't seen a piece, that's a little bit of the Berlin Wall, in case you don't believe it. But it was given to me by an East German evangelist about 2 months ago when I was out there. And the fact is that Eastern Europe, and particularly with regard to the work of God, has been ongoing for a very, very long time. One of the things which I've been thrilled over is that the Lord has had his servants out there for well over 100 years. There have been various servants of the Lord called to those parts from way back in the year 1900 and even before. There were various Britishers that worked out there. There have been different other European servants. And the work behind the Iron Curtain in the post-war period has continued almost non-stop since right after the last war. There were servants of the Lord, there were evangelist teachers going out there in 1946-47. We went out to Austria in 1950 and got engaged in learning a language, a culture, a continent. And then in 1960, I first went through the Iron Curtain to discover that there was a mighty work of God going on. Now, those were some of the most intense and difficult decades under communism. But what amazed and thrilled me as I moved from country to country was to find hundreds of assemblies meeting quietly under great pressure, in great privation, in little back rooms, in broken down warehouses, in old disused breweries and places like that. But they were there, the Lord's people, and often in considerable numbers.
Would you say that the fact that each assembly was autonomous and there was no central control group helped them survive through this period?
Well, it's one of the key features or characteristics of the local church, the local assembly, that they have within themselves, under the lordship, the headship of Christ, that divine supply and resource to survive. It is the unique hallmark, I believe, of any local church. But the fact is, of course, to conform and to come within the pressures, the rules and regulations of the communist world, our assemblies also had to toe the line, and that did at times cause difficulties. For example, in Czechoslovakia, they were in 1950, because for 2 years they had been given a choice to try and find some way of representation of the assemblies, and there were 250 at that time, with the new incoming communist government of 1948, they couldn't agree. And in 1950, they were closed down. and they were kept without the opportunity to convene for 6 years. And in 1956, they eventually came to an agreement. They were allowed to reconvene, but by that time, they had lost nearly 40% of their membership and almost as many of their assembly meeting places.
What about the distribution of Bibles in Eastern Europe? How is it going along? I know they were quite expensive when the walls first came tumbling down, but are they more accessible now, more available?
Well, John, Bible distribution has always been one of those, what shall I call it, red-hot poachers in connection with Eastern Europe. There have been those people who for 25 or more years made a great deal of news and capital out of smuggling Bibles. Let me explain very quickly the real situation as we found it through our constant ongoing ministry these 30 years. Basically, there were three countries who, by law, were strictly forbidden the importation of Bibles. Those were the Soviet Union and Romania and Bulgaria. What we're seeing happening today. Now the doors into all these countries, including those where they've been starved, they are now wide open. And over the past year, we've been involved in getting over 100,000 Bibles into different countries in 5 languages. Many others are doing the same. Testaments. We're helping with evangelistic tools. And in the last 6 or 7 months, different gospels. Nearly 500,000 in connection with other workers in Romanian, Polish, Hungarian, for evangelistic purposes. So there are many possibilities today. The door is wide open, and literature is one of them.
What's the price of a Bible, let's say, in Romanian language or the Czech language?
Nowadays, we reckon to get Bibles to somewhere, let me put it quickly into your currency, between $4 and $5 maximum. In some cases, even less. For example, I've just ordered within the last month 20,000 more Bibles in Russian, and they will cost no more than maximum $3.
This was not the case a little while ago when the Romanian country was first opened up. The Bibles are much more expensive because of short supply.
Well, I think the problem that arose there was that Romania had been particularly starved of literature, and there was a mad rush by all the various missions who were based different parts of Central Europe to rush in with as many Bibles as they could get hold of. Well, it didn't take long for the number of stocks and supplies in Bible societies and warehouses and so on to be quickly taken in, and by March, April of last year, they were all exhausted. We couldn't get hold of scriptures. And we've been waiting for months now to get them printed. I've been obtaining them more recently, printed in Hungary, but deliberately going for the large print variety. The others that were taken in the earlier days were the little, almost small pocket edition, but because they were in great demand, well, they took a greater price.
What would you say some of the needs of the saints in Eastern Europe are now? We know they still need the scriptures, but anything else?
I suppose I would categorize it in 3 ways. Firstly, literature of all types, the scriptures being primary, and then along with that, good teaching books of every type, not only for adults, also for children. They need materials in all manner of youth and camp work and children's work. They need, outside of literature and all the various teaching aids, flannel graph, and the various other possibilities, then they need building. They need to be able to develop their opportunities both in campsites, bookshops, teaching centers, and these sort of places, retirement homes, and these are all burning needs, namely to get hold of suitable property. And here again, it's been our privilege in our ministry over these 30 years to help channel out finance in a variety of ways to over 150 different building projects in many different countries, and even now we're involved in at least another 6 buildings in different parts. But when I tell you, in Romania, since last year, 80 assemblies have decided they want to build, and they are all very keen to get ahead with it, and they will. They have got a remarkable vision, tenacity, and faith in the Lord in Romania.
Now, let's take a look at some of these countries individually. Tell us a little bit about the work in, let's say, Russia, how you approached it in the past, how you're approaching it now, and what you look forward to, about the work of the Lord in Russia.
In a couple of sentences, John, to talk about Russia is extremely difficult, as it is.
You can have three or four.
Okay, thank you. The largest country on earth, 15 major languages, some 280 million people, some 300 minor languages, and stretching from European parts right over to the Sea of Japan, and right from the northern Arctic Circle right down to the borders of China. So a mighty big area, but concentrating the greater part of its population and activity in less than one-third, which we call European Russia, west of the Urals. With regard to, let me concentrate on evangelical work. Under Stalin, all religion was banned. Before that, Lenin had tolerated a little. Between 1921 and 26, when he died from his assassination wounds. Not until 1944 did Stalin allow a registration of evangelical Christians. Those included a group called evangelical Christians, who were the outcrop of the work of Lord Radstock around the turn of the century. And a great work was done through that remarkable man, that nobleman from Britain. That went on almost until the revolution the First World War in 1914. Then came the war, the revolution, and so on. 1944 then, these evangelical Christians, and whatever Baptists there were joined together with some Pentecostals, and later in 63 with some Mennonites. Now, those who registered, always the statistic given me was 5,000 groups of Christians right across the Soviet Union, and some of them as many as 5,000 in size. Now, I spoke to that 5,000 group in Moscow. It was the only church of Christians there in that whole vicinity. Today, in the same area, they called it the Moscow district, there are at least 22 known groups of evangelicals. The difficulty is that the work of Lord Radstock was the nearest thing in principle to our New Testament local church. We don't have a so-called assembly as to what we might understand in our Western and English-speaking concept of the New Testament assembly. But, there's a big but. Since things have eased over the last 2 years, all manner of groups are springing up, and I am convinced among them there will be dozens, perhaps scores, there may even be hundreds of those groups of believers who will eventually find their pattern according to the Word of God and will blossom as such, because they are inclined that way. Now, that's a very thumbnail sketch.
All right, in time stress, you did a lot of radio work into Russia, did you?
Right, we shared in it.
Are you going to continue that, or are you going to decrease that to increase other activities?
Well, I believe radio work still got a very important ministry, naturally, around the world, and it was particularly useful in the years when so many areas of Eastern Europe were inaccessible to direct evangelism and teaching ministry. But now those doors are much wider open, accessibility is very real, and furthermore, the needs for literature, I believe, are paramount. Bearing in mind, you've got nearly 400 million people who have been starved of literature almost non-stop for anywhere up to 40, 50 years. So there's a huge vacuum that we've got to fill.
Well, now let's move to Poland. Tell us a little about the background of Poland, what's going on there now, your recent visit.
Fascinating country, lovable people, altogether an aesthetic people over against the Teutonic, disciplined, formal. The Polish type of person is an artistic and very friendly, dominated, of course, by the Roman Catholic Church for over 1,000 years, with a following today of over 80%. And the churches are still full. They were full right through the communist period. And I want to emphasize this, my dear friend, that in spite of communism, God was at work in Eastern Europe. Couldn't make headline news, didn't make a sensational story, but the Lord was powerfully at work. And I met hundreds and thousands of people who loved the Lord quietly and carried on day by day, even under communism. In Poland today, there's a very confused situation, but in essence, The assemblies have had a great time of blessing. Back in 1980, there were 35, I call them groups of believers, 21 so-called recognized assemblies, 14 little preaching points. They could be anywhere from 5 to 15 people, meeting in a home somewhere. Those have grown under a particular wave of evangelism through a handful of dedicated Polish workers, and today we have nearly 90 such groups and assemblies, 50 recognized assemblies and the others potential assemblies, and that has happened within the last 10 years. Poland has seen a wave of blessing. Economically, they're desperately poor. They're struggling against enormous inflation. They're going to have a terrible problem to get their way back into some sort of stability. It could take a generation.
Okay, thank you. Could you tell us a little now about Czechoslovakia in the same line?
A totally different type of country. Poland with 36 million, Czechoslovakia 15 million. I indicated that earlier there are 150 assemblies today, ranging in size from one end of the country to the other. As it's the land of my ancestry, the Czech area, I'm very, very fond of it, naturally. But it's got really two peoples, the Czechs and the Slovaks. And more recently, the Slovaks, wanting their own recognition, do not want to be called Czechoslovakia anymore. It is now the Federation of the Czech and Slovak Republics. So please bear that in mind when you write this. But that apart, throughout the country, there are 150 assemblies. They have been terribly suppressed over the last 22 years since the marching in of the Warsaw Pact forces in August of 68, when 650,000 troops went in, and that country came under a Stalinist pressure again, and the assemblies had only a handful of Bibles every year, no books. They were discouraged in children's work, youth work, camp work, radio work, bookshops, teaching, training. Everything was forbidden. They were allowed one thing only, conferences. They've used them, and they have monthly, quarterly, half-yearly, yearly conferences. They are packed. The believers make great use of them, and there are these great number of healthy, virile, fruitful, ongoing assemblies in that country. It's a thrill to be in the Czech Assembly. In 2 weeks, I'll be at the Big Easter Conference in Northern Moravia. We anticipate 1,500 will be there, and I would say at least a third, if not more, will be under 35 to 40 years of age. So Czechoslovakia is very much an encouraging country today. But in addition, let me just quickly say this, that they have seen the opportunity of the new open doors, and they're thrilled. They're just buying up the time. So they're opening bookshops, they're getting out into camp work, they're doing all types of personal door-to-door work, they're doing all sorts of visitation to hotels, open-air work, and they're wanting to get into a whole variety. Radio work is developing, great possibilities in Czechoslovakia. And we're encouraging them all we can.
Good. Now let's move to Romania.
A very big kettle of fish, 26 million people, and a very, very different situation. Economically, terribly poor, politically still with some confusion, as we all know, since the death of Ceausescu, the execution on Christmas Day of 1989. Now, the fact is, behind that lies a tremendous story. I've been going to Romania for a quarter of a century, and regularly, frequently helping them at different levels, the supplies and so on. But the great thing that came in upon me 15, 20 years ago, these Romanians have a zeal and a love for the Lord and His Word which is second to none throughout the whole of Europe. And that is what I believe has made such a tremendous impact upon the West, not only the TV shops, but also the fact that there's so many reports coming out that these believers are alive for God. And their assemblies have always been packed to the doors. And they've got some big ones. They've got over 400 assemblies with about 42,000 members. And these spread from one side of the country to the other, north to south. The largest one which I've been in has got over 1,100 members up on the northeastern borders near Russia.
All right.
Very good. That's encouraging. Before I move to another country, is it true that in addition to good literature getting in with the open doors that have come in Eastern Europe, that there's an awful lot of bad literature and trash and pornography and everything else getting across the border?
Inevitably. I mean, when you get the opening up of any borders, well, the devil obviously jumps in with both feet like anybody else. And there have been these purveyors of the perverted literature as much as anybody else. And it used to be one pleasure, I must say, that in the communist world there were many, many difficulties and disadvantages. But one of the things we used to thrill about in Britain, a woman didn't go out after darkness in most places. In Europe, Eastern Europe, you could walk around, the women could walk around any time after dark, and there was virtually no danger of being attacked. But now, so-called liberty has come, you've got a different type of police discipline, and the whole situation has changed, and changed rapidly. Just one instance, you won't mind this diversion, I heard a chief of police in East Germany say this, that he had been in his position in a particular town in East Germany, and I think my figure is correct, about 40 years, and he had only heard of 2 bank raids. Within the last 15 months, there have been over 150 in the same area. That's the sort of thing that's happened. But coming back to, what was the original question?
About bad literature and good literature.
Well, I mean, it's all wrapped up together. It's the influence of the world coming in. Right. And, of course, there is an overspill of that. And then, of course, there are all the false sects. They're making headlines, or they're making headway, rather, in getting in their materials and patting in all that they can. Even in the difficult years, I have to say, even those groups grew quite a bit. It's quite astonishing that JWs, their leaders, were shut away in prison. They had no right to convene, and yet somehow they multiplied, and similarly some of the other groups, like a group like Hare Krishna, that particular group, they were in existence in Russia, and their leaders were shut away. And so many other groups of people, religious people, suffered under communism. But at the same time, I have to say to you, and I love that scripture that our brother read about the glory of the Lord and the persecution of the believers. It wasn't touched on, 1 Peter 1:7, that the testing, the trial of your faith, is much more precious than gold, that it might appear to the praise and the glory of the Lord at the revelation of Jesus Christ. And you know, that has been proven 1,000 times over in Eastern Europe. As the believers have gone through the difficulties, the fires of testing, their faith has deepened, their love has grown, their fellowship has brought them together, and tremendous blessings in Eastern Europe. That's why so many people go out, they get a surprise, and they love to go. But it has been extremely tough.
All right, let's move on to another country. How about Hungary?
I would ask you prayers for Hungary in a particular way for this reason. Hungary has 10 million people. They have a very predominantly Roman Catholic Reformed Church background, Calvinist and Reformed Church. Behind that, these 10 million people, the same people, they are not of a Teutonic, nor a Slav, nor a Latin background. They are of an Asiatic, semi-Asiatic background with a semi-Asiatic language, and a very unusual language. But one of the difficulties of being in the country is that they have not got on with the great task of evangelism as they might have done. Now, that doesn't mean to say they've done nothing. But the assembly position is that there are about 5 major assemblies in provincial towns. They range 100 to 200 in fellowship. The biggest assembly is in Budapest, with about 500 plus in fellowship, and a beautiful new building with which we've helped. Some opened about 6 years or 4 to 6 years ago. And beyond that, about 20 or so smaller groups of believers, smaller assemblies. The greatest difficulty is that for a variety of reasons, too complex to mention here, the believers have not been encouraged to evangelize. Now, we believe that is changing within the last 6 months. And they are capturing the vision to go out and spread the good news of the grace of God. And I would urge you, please, dear friends, to pray for Hungary. It's economically speaking, it's as bright as Czechoslovakia. They'll take about 10 years or so to get into something of the mainstream of European economics. But Poland and Romania will take a lifetime. And Bulgaria and Albania, well, who knows? Could be anywhere from 25 to 40, 50 years.
Well, you touched on our next country, Bulgaria, in that last remark. What can you tell us about that area?
The assembly position has been very difficult there. They were actually banned all through the communist period from having any official meeting. That was due to rather a sad misunderstanding and misinterpretation, we feel, of the Word of God way back when communism took over. I won't go into the details, but in effect, the assemblies were not considered to be an official Christian group of Christians. That is, they were just a few sort of oddbobs around the country who sort of chose to come together when the fancy took them. It was a completely wrong impression given to the government, so the government did not recognize them, which meant that about 8 or 10 or so small groups of believers used to meet secretly, quietly, in homes, in small groups. I've spoken to several of them over the years. The major groups in the country, evangelically, there was a group of about 5,000 Pentecostals and about 800 Baptists, and the assemblies, I suppose, as far as we can tell, there were about 300 believers in the country. Now we believe that has changed already. Within a year, they have opened up, they are registering and developing their work quite openly. There's already a very fine development of two assemblies in Sofia, the capital, and they are asking for help, they're asking for visitors, and we're directing people and supplies to go down there and share in that ministry. And I hope to go again myself before the year is out, if all goes well.
How about Yugoslavia?
Another different kettle of fish again. You've got a completely different situation. Bulgaria is about 10 million. And one thing I must add, they've never had scriptures. In all the 40 years that I've had to do with them, I've never heard, even though they kept on promising them, they never got a New Testament. And I can't tell you the pleasure. Last year, in July, I called into the German Bible house at Stuttgart to pick up 1,000 Bibles on the way to Romania. And I was thrilled in the warehouse to see great mountain stacks of Bulgarian Bibles destined for Bulgaria. And I tell you, I took half a dozen pictures. My heart overflowed to see the Word of God in that language. Coming to Yugoslavia, it is a different country of 26 million. And it has at least 4 major ethnic groups, if not more. The Slovenians in the north, with the Croatians, predominantly Catholic, about 5 million altogether, and the industrial heartland of the country. Further south, 6 million Serbians, dominated by the Serbian Orthodox Church, which is ritualistic and dead spiritually, and further south of those, in Macedonia, 3 million Muslims. Now, those are all in conflict with each other to some degree, plus smaller groups like the Bosnians, the Herzegovinians, and then other various ethnic groups like the Slovaks and the Romanians and Hungarians are all in the country. And you've heard that right down at the south, north of Albania, there's an area known as Kosovo. And that they are mostly ex-Albanians, claiming independence, wanting their own rights, and in conflict with the Serbian and national government. Yugoslavia, struggling through extreme inflation, economically they've known a better standard and a higher opportunity of life than most of the other countries because of Tito, who did such a lot for them until he died in the, when was it, about 1979.
What about the little one of Albania? You tell us much about
coming out of their igloo, out of their ice house, at long last, but it will be a little while, I think, before these communist authorities are prepared to slacken their grip. I didn't mention this with regard to the Soviet Union, with Perestroika and Glasnost, because it's too big a subject. But in actual fact, with Albania, they have already declared that Christian religions may be free, that all religious faiths are free, and they are free to propagate, free to exist. But the big problem is that with a population of 2.5 million, 70% historically and nominally Islamic, and then 10% nominally Christian, but of the Eastern Orthodox and Roman Catholic background, and no known Protestants, no known evangelicals. And we don't know what's going to happen. What we will find there, we have no idea, because that country's been jammed of gospel broadcasts for years and years.
We might make one little comment. There is a brother from commended from an assembly in Mexico. He's an Italian fellow. He spends time in Italy, but he periodically makes trips into Albania with the gospel. It's only a small effort, but nevertheless, there is something being done, and we just pray that the Lord will bless his work. His name is Librado Salgado. Just to go back to two things. You mentioned Lord Radstock. That's a very interesting story. Is there anything currently available in print on that story that people want to read about?
Not in print. I'm afraid that the books that tell that story are largely out of print, but I believe that it will come into print again, because there's such an awakened interest, and undoubtedly the next year or two is going to find a lot of examination of what is happening to those evangelicals in the Soviet Union.
All right, then refresh our minds on the name of Czechoslovakia, what they would like to be called anyway, the Federation?
The Federation of Czech and Slovak Republics. F-C-S-R.
Hmm. Like the USSR, huh?
Almost.
F-C-S-R.
Except the USSR stands for the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics,
yeah.
And there's no socialism attached to this.
Okay. Another question, in the interest of a man, is there any Bible correspondence courses in any of those languages, or should I be asking that to Brother?
They're not developing, to my knowledge, yet. I think they've got many things in the pipeline, and in the past, the German language, there are several courses, and yeah, I've got a number of those, and they've been going for some years. In the other languages, I believe they're coming on, but you've got a representative of the mayor's here. He's the best man to answer. We'll go to the horse's mouth.
We'll get him on the panel, maybe. In your service for the Lord, this is a little commercial, let's say, but just that CMML is a service organization, and over the years, have they been of any help to you in your service for the Lord, and how?
Oh, very much so, because the world is becoming an increasingly smaller place. There's a tremendous amount of international communications and development, and we are indeed very much in touch with your North American continent and with the many, many servants of the Lord which are going from here, over which we rejoice. And therefore, you are, as far as a good many of us are concerned, and certainly where I'm concerned, the natural channel to which we seek help, advice, and all manner of technical and administrative facilities. And I think there's another important thing, and that is, in these days when world frontiers have changed, a person could travel through Europe 100 years ago without a passport. But with all the changes of the First World War, then the Second World War, then communism, every country has imposed a whole mass of regulations. And the Christian missionary going out in connection with attendants, who claims to have only direct dependence upon the Lord, both for himself and his supplies and many other things, it's great to have some kind of recognized authority with you and behind you. And yet, at the same time, it's not an authority which directs, which clamps and hinders and even threatens, but far rather is a means of encouragement and facilitating the work that Christian worker goes to do as led of the Lord. And in that respect, I know that the tremendous ministry you're doing through CMML, as our service organization in Britain called Echoes of Service, and in Canada and in New Zealand, they all seek to do the same. And I want to thank the Lord, because I know I've used CMML a great deal in supporting radio ministry in Eastern Europe, and we've channeled the funds through you to your North American office of TWR. So we found a great deal of help, John, and I am the first, not necessarily to blow your trumpet, but certainly to recognize your very, very valuable and excellent facilities.
It's been a big challenge in international finance and such things. It got so that Trans World Radio insisted on payment in American dollars. And here's the brother working out of England with English pounds, and for no value, they wouldn't take his payment. So Brother Brungrom would send his funds over to us, we'd put them into dollars, and then they would go to Trans World Radio. We're doing that with a lot of our missionaries, with Canadian dollars and British pounds. All right. We only have a few minutes left. I want you to get in a few words about what you brought up here, but what are the opportunities that you see at the present time that are working in that part of Eastern Europe, and what should we be praying for, what should we be involved in, and things like that?
Firstly, I've given you a lot of information. I've brought a bit of it together on this information sheet. It's either yellow or white. I'll leave them out the back. If you care to take them, we'll remind you of some of the things and the statistics which drop out of my lips, because that's my everyday tool of trade, so to speak, and it may remind you and help you. Secondly, we do publish, as you've heard from John, a half-yearly news bulletin, and this time it's a three-page thing. We normally only send two sheets, but the third sheet is to be torn off for anybody who's interested and wants to keep. That third sheet describes our financial operations as we work by faith, and the other two sheets, or combined sheet, will tell you a bit more about what we get up to in detail, and it contains a lot of other information and statistics. Thirdly, if you care to take a prayer card to you for yourself or your assembly and pray for us, and not only for us, of course, very essentially for those who work with us, and there are quite a number, and also, more importantly, the hundreds, over 800 assemblies in Eastern Europe with whom we have to do. And what's the best for the future? Well, we have an 8-channeled ministry going on, and that covers the whole range of literature, printing, publishing, radio, youth work, camp work, children's work, buildings, various types of buildings, assembly buildings, retirement homes, and so on. And so we cover a whole spectrum. The supply of suitable vehicles to full-time workers, sometimes vans, minibuses, whatever they may be, or cars, bicycles, motorbikes, whatever may be the need, and above all else, scriptures. I would say scriptures of every type, and here in my hand I've got a couple of children's New Testaments in Russian and Romanian, and in the last month or so we've already taken out 25,000, there's another 25,000 going in Russian and Romanian shortly. So, many opportunities, and we've already into many things for this year. Beyond that, in Romania you've got the so-called orphanages. They're not strictly orphanages, they're children's homes. Supplies into them, also to hospitals. They are desperately short of even the basic medical supplies. We are trying to help with that. We have 2 truckloads ourselves going in about a month's time to Romania, and there are many other people trying to help, all of which is very valuable. The biggest problem amongst the evangelicals, and certainly amongst our assemblies, we don't have enough cooperation. What our brother was saying about this inter-assembly fellowship, coordination, and harmony, we see it demonstrated in Eastern Europe all the time. If they have something in one particular part, they'll travel miles. Even to funerals, they'll travel 50, 60, 100 miles for a funeral. And it's just thrilling to see the way there is an interdependence between these people. And it's just one of those expressions, as we've heard, that it may be to the glory of God.
Thank you, Bill. We appreciate this interview. Our time is about up, so we'll turn it back to the chairman. Remember, you can talk to Bill during the lunch break when you have time, and if you want to, you can touch a piece of the Berlin Wall that he has with him. So maybe you'll never get to Berlin, but you can touch it anyway.
Please only touch it. Don't take it.
Don't take it. Let me touch it. Okay.